Well, I can't think of better theme music than what we just played as an intro to Brewocracy Now with Port Townsend City Manager John Morrow every Thursday morning. And as usual, always accepting your questions at dj@kptz.org. Although I must say, if you have questions for City Manager John Morrow, it's best to get them in early. Our 25 minutes goes very quickly, and I don't expect this to be any different today. Hello, John.
Hello, Tim. Good to see you and hear you.
Oh,
good. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I was hoping you would be part of a conga line to that music, given the weather we have. But
I don't know if you saw me. I was trying to get through my sandwich before you turned the on button, and I was kind of grooving out a little bit. I have to say, it brings back memories of recording that promo. So well done, sir. Well done.
John, generally you are working your way through a sandwich just prior to Brewocracy Now. So why change now? It's been an interesting week in Port Townsend. I have a few questions from the public that I will throw out to you just in a while, but I would like to really take this time and let you do the introduction and maybe speak about what's on your mind before we delve into the questions from the public.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Tim. I guess I need to earn my kind of quasi co-host chops here. So today I'm excited to have Chief Brett Black from East Jefferson Fire and Rescue with us. I think by way of introduction, I mean, I was cramming my sandwich in between meetings where I just saw Chief Black. So, we tend to overlap and have some time together. It's a new relationship for the city. Right before I arrived, when the city annexed our fire services into East Jefferson Fire and Rescue, it was a pass that neither Chief Black nor I were directly a part of. We inherited. And Chief, I hope it's okay for me to say, we got off on the right foot, starting really productive conversations about our strategic visions and alignment and our organizations working well together. And it's been a lot of fun. So it's kind of continues that excitement for me to have Chief Black with us today.
Welcome, hey, Chief Black.
Thank you. Just to give a little more context to Mr. Morrow's comments. I'm excited to be the new fire chief. I am a transplant to the area, but my wife and I fell in love with the area when we were being recruited, probably not unlike Mr. Morrow when his family was considering the move. And it's been a great move for us. We love the area and the community. And just to pick up on the annexation comment there, we do work really well together and have, none of the firsthand experiences from the merger or the annexation, rather, I should say, from the past, but we are still a fairly new organization. Many cities, I should say, have their own fire department that's exclusive to the boundaries of the city, and many counties have a fire department that's exclusive to the county. And East Jefferson Fire Rescue is actually kind of a hybrid. We're a fire district under Washington state law, which is very similar to where I came from in California, that a community is allowed to create a fire or even a utility district as well. So that we are the Port Townsend Fire Department and parts of Jefferson County Fire Department at the same time. So on the side of our engines and ambulances, you'll see the communities we serve, including Maristone Island, Cape George, Port Hadlock, certainly Port Townsend, and others. So it's been a real exciting transition here and getting to know everybody. I was living briefly for the first few months in Port Townsend, and my wife and I quickly became big walkers. You probably saw us walking at about 6:30 in the morning, which is where I got this background picture that you see here at sunrise. But it's an amazing town and community at large. We're really excited to be here.
Well, and I was going to ask you if that was live or if that was a filter behind your Zoom, and now you answered that question for me. Two things. Last week, I thought you would be here last week, and I took a quick look at your bio, which, like many people in government and business in this town, is way more impressive than I would think is normally found in areas of this size. You came from, I believe, the Port from the Port Reyes area in California, and you were in Clovis for quite a long time. Along the way, you've made a lot of stops, and you've had some interesting training and supervisory experiences. We're really glad to have you, and I love your name, man. That's like such a cowboy name, you know.
Brett Black. It's funny you mentioned that about my name. My great grandfather was actually a child actor in westerns.
That totally makes sense.
And he had the same name.
Yeah, old time radio, same thing. So welcome to town. I know that both you and John are fresh from the BOCC meeting, which I streamed as well as I could, given my limited technological abilities. And so I'm going to throw something out there, John, because as you might guess, the questions that I have are related to the issues that you were both just recently been involved with. Is there anything that either of you, I guess the question, you can go either way, any insight, any direction, any clarity that was received from today's meeting?
Well, maybe Chief, I'll take a first crack at that. You know, we were there probably for very similar reasons, but with different levels of expertise and, you know, perspectives maybe on it. So for those listening, the County Board of Commissioners had a special meeting that just ended, I'm told, just now, and for about an hour and a half to discuss, you know, possible options for temporary homeless encampments, currently embodied really by the fairground situation. And I think most of us can all agree that, you know, it's not an easy situation. And the issue of homelessness isn't something that is new to Port Townsend, but it's also not something that's necessarily getting better or will get better into the future. And I guess, you know, my only comment to start off, Tim, is, you know, there's a lot of complex kind of pieces to this one, not just that meeting, but, you know, what is the city doing, the county doing, what are providers doing, what does it mean for fire and rescue? What, I mean, there's just an endless amount of questions and kind of layers here. But I've just kind of noticed, and this sounds maybe naive and maybe, you know, a little scolding, but what I've noticed in the dialogue is that, you know, people are pretty heated. And I think that's okay, because we've got passionate people with strong views and they're articulate. And I mean, that's part of one of a million reasons why I love this place. But I've also noted that, you know, there's kind of some real anger. And I guess what I want to kind of impress, and I'm going to try to hold myself accountable to this too, is that as we're airing options, exploring ideas, trying to figure out solutions to a real existential crisis that is borne by many communities across the country, maybe world, is that those who are trying to work on this, the providers, the county commissioners, especially today, are really coming at this from trying to do the right thing, you know. And I think we as a community should at least understand we're going to make some huge missteps. You know, I know from reading the paper that there are a lot of folks who disagree with particular commissioners' perspectives on this and work on this. But it ain't because this commissioner isn't trying, you know. And I think fault us on the process, fault us on the, you know, the approach and on the decisions that, you know, that elected officials make and city and county governments, you know, take on. But let's try to keep it non-hostile in terms of people's intent, because honestly, it's a dire situation. It's complicated. And there's timelines here that are really, really quick and processes that move really, really slowly. So I just want to make sure that as we as a community discuss very difficult issues, and this will not be the last time, it's certainly not the first time, that we just kind of remember, let's at least assume good intent from everybody playing a role.
And speaking of playing a role, Chief Black plays a large role in that. Not only the fire protection, but the EMT mission of East Jefferson Fire and Rescue comes into play a large amount when we're talking about our homeless situation. I'm guessing at that. Is it a big part of your workload? Is it negligible? Would it happen anyway? What are your thoughts about the changes that you are faced with as chief, given the current climate?
Yeah, first, great question. And I'll just maybe echo or appropriate some of Mr. Murrow's comments. My focus is to identify solutions and recommendations and not to get held back with trying to take sides or hold somebody in contempt for a previous decision or process. Not to say there isn't something to be learned from the past, but really as, you know, community leaders and, you know, specifically emergency first responder leader, our job is focused on providing a high level of care and to make recommendations for city and county policy leaders for this specific topic. So there was a little bit of expectation, I think, from some of the community and even some of the local elected officials that the fire department would give a thumbs up or thumbs down type opinion to this topic. And that is not our role. Our role is to identify the risks and to identify the mitigations to those risks and, you know, recommendations to solve the risks. We are by title a fire department, but really in the practical sense, we are risk managers. And that is really important for the public to remember and have that context. If you put enough time and energy to a certain proposal, you can mitigate most of the time, or you know, I haven't yet to run across an instance where that's not possible. You can mitigate the solution or the problem with a solution. And that, whether it's, you know, the underhoused or unhoused community needing to come to a new site or some other issue with another facility or another business, we can solve, you know, and mitigate most risks that we're facing. And so the fire department's role isn't to say go, no go. It's really to say, hey, these are the hazards, and that assessment of the hazards is really important. And that's a process, not just my from the hip, you know, hyperbole. And then these are going to be how we solve or reduce the threats to the community and to the occupants of the underhoused encampment as well. So I think that's an important kind of starting point for the conversation. But back to your other question about the current impact, we do provide 911 EMS services throughout our district in District 1 in the county. And it's approximately 70 to 75% of our call volume. We have highly qualified EMTs and paramedics. We collaborate with Jefferson Healthcare, our medical program director, and other community leaders and public safety leaders as well with that response. On almost, I would say more than a daily basis, we interact with city and county officials on the same 911 incidents. So we are very much a team when we deliver our services. As far as what the impact is to the site that exists today, they have needs that aren't much, if any, different from the rest of the community. We have underserved members, socially and economically challenged members of the encampment that's there now, but we also have those in the rest of the community. And they rely on EMS or the emergency medical system to supplement their inability to properly care for themselves, whether it's a fire or a medical need or battery change in their smoke detector.
You know, on that subject of mitigating risk, you are relatively new to this community, but you're not new to this field. That's from Clovis. I mean, one thing that we've spoken about, John and I, previously, is how we're not in a vacuum. We're not facing issues that other municipalities all over other counties are not facing. Is there anything in your previous life in, let's just say, Clovis, that you found helpful or worked from the perspective of the EMT fire department?
Yeah, there are some models that we look to in public safety, specifically fire and EMS. We call it community risk reduction. And that is a methodical process that is more or less an emergency strategic plan. that identifies where we are today with the services we provide, what the threats are to the community. And threats is not like a violent episode, but the term threats is kind of defined of as, you know, what's causing people to get hurt or killed. And that could be fire, medical vehicles, trip hazards in homes. And that community risk reduction, we actually call it CRR. There's a fire services renowned for a bunch of acronyms that nobody can remember except us. It drives my wife crazy. We go to special training to learn how to implement these schemes. And depending how the direction from the community leaders or city leaders to the fire department and the funding, how we apply those community risk reduction measures and implement them with the support of the fiscally and direction from community leaders can have a significant impact in reducing impact the safety elements to the community. So for example, I remember back in the day that we identified a significant increase in kitchen or cooking fires from approximately 3 p.m. until dinner time. And it was only in one geographic area. And when we started, you know, really drilling in on the cause, what we realized is this was a social economically depressed district of our bigger city. And a lot of the parents, this is like 2007, 2008-ish, a lot of the parents that previously were a single income home or maybe even one and a half income homes were now forced to work multiple jobs each. So you had kids coming home from school trying to cook, right? So that's what we mean by risk reduction. So we implemented a program, a training program even for fire, cooking fire safety in the schools for after school care, trying to teach kids of what you should and shouldn't be doing when you're home alone. And that simple explanation is one of the things that we could do for a number of the risks in the community. And so the risks that are implemented or applied to the underhoused community are similar. We do get people trying to cook in a tent, you know, which leads to carbon monoxide, a medical event, or even a fire. We have had a couple fires at these encampments. So the elements that we could, or lessons to be learned there, is maybe we should identify those risks, do a formal assessment, and with the community leader's help, implement some rules for when and what and how you do some of these high risk activities and train people to find other opportunities or solutions.
Definitely a benefit of having a seasoned professional, not your first rodeo, to go back to the cowboy analogy. And thank you for, and I know that this is a difficult question to pose. And before it gets away from me, John, I have to get to the comments I've received from the public. And my caveat is that many of these you may view as being directed more towards Greg Brotherton. So the scope of your answer, I understand, may be somewhat limited, but it is kind of our commitment to answer questions, or to at least to take the question. So I'll paraphrase this one. This one from Tiffany. One reason why Brotherton has chosen this site, and I think we know what we're talking about, out Cape George, is because he says there is no other site. Brotherton also claims that the city has not been part of the conversation and presently has not offered to help with the situation. Why has the city not stepped in and not used its dedicated funds or properties from its affordable housing ILA?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the question. And I think first, and just a clarification, there's no decision that Commissioner Brotherton made. So I think that one kind of got away a little bit in the press. And I think, you know, the conversation with the commissioners just now, as an open public meeting, illustrates that, you know, by law, they can't actually have conversations privately. They have to do it so in public. And there are a couple commissioners coming up to speed with some of Greg's thinking. So, you know, that's not a decision that has been made, or, you know, it didn't seem like during the meeting today that there was a clear path forward and a decision. So just to clarify, there haven't been decisions. Now, I guess the kind of the critical feedback on city involvement, you know, look, I've said this before on this show, probably last 5 months in a row, that this is an all hands on deck exercise. And I think that's why we've been, you know, the city attorney and police chief have been joining the conversation around the fairgrounds and what's next there for quite some time with interest and with active involvement. And so, you know, you can fault the city for not coming up with a silver bullet answer also. We haven't. But we are progressing other things too. I mean, I think that's another one of my calls here is, you know, this isn't like what's the solution. There's a suite of solutions and they all serve slightly different purposes and need to be netted together. And I'll just use one example. I mean, you know, you look at our code, we allow for temporary camp tent encampments, but we only allow for one. And so right now there's an active engagement with the community build project to locate wooden tent structures in the city of Port Townsend. And it requires, our code requires wraparound services and a sponsor agency. You know, there's a lot of details we wanna work out, including details we're working out with East Jefferson Fire and Rescue and Brett's team, Chief Black's team. So I think, you know, I'm not trying to use it as defense. I mean, clearly we need to do more collectively, but it's not like the city's sitting on the sidelines. I mean, I've had conversations with Commissioner Brotherton myself. That's kind of why I led out with that in this conversation, because, you know, he's desperately looking for solutions. We're all probably tripping over things as we try to get to the solutions, but it's not because he's sitting on his hands, not paying attention. And I think the same with the city.
Well, and I think that the point that needs to be made is people like myself, as self-described average bloke, can do nothing, actually. But when I looked at that Zoom meeting with all the electeds on there and the people along with Chief Black on there, these are folks that have to do something. And that is a very important distinction, I think, for everybody to remember. And I do hope that we can keep it civil. We can keep, I mean, this is a community where we fight over roundabouts. So
We will again. But hey, I think there's another part of that question from Tiffany too, Tim, if I might, about the funds we use from the, you know, so-called 148, 149 funds. And now actually county approved HB 1590 funds. You know, we're in active engagement with the county right now, talking through how we align our ILA to reflect these new funding sources that have recently been decided. And I think the only caveat I'd offer, and I did bite my tongue in the commissioner meeting, you know, those funds are eligible to be used for some of these things, but it goes through a very clear process. And I think I don't, you know, want to, it's classic a bureaucrat talking about process, but, you know, we have a process for a reason, so that we can weigh options, so that we have the right input from the right stakeholders. And right now there's a housing task force and a subcommittee on shelters. There's a housing task force that makes a recommendation on the use of those funds to the joint oversight board, on which Mayor Sandoval, Commissioner Eisenhower and others sit, or I'm sorry, I'm forgetting who the representatives are. I know Mayor Sandoval is. And they move forward with those recommendations and make formal decisions. So I just want to make sure that, you know, we can use funding for various things like the question, but those decisions have not been made and need to go through that process.
Thank you. Chief Black, this question I think has evolved into a question for you, and it did begin with a number of questions. This is from Lisa. Lisa, if you're out there, most of these questions I think are so directly related to Greg Brotherton that I can't ask our current guests to channel him. Hopefully sometime in the future, and Greg Brotherton is no stranger to KPTZ, these questions can be pointedly asked. I didn't think it reasonable to ask of our current guests. However, you did have one here, and I think I know where you're going with this, and it is question number 6. How many ablaze 150-foot Doug firs can be extinguished with 1,000 gallons of water? After the 1,000 gallons are spent, what is the plan to save the homes?
So I'm assuming that for context, you're talking about at the Cape George site.
I think that's a fair assumption.
Okay. So the water that is or proposed to be stored on site is actually for the encampment itself. That clarifies the need for water. And whether or not 1,000 gallons is enough We would have to, we have not formally been part of any input or review of the plan out there, but I'm fairly confident that the code actually talks about fire water is the slang that we use for that that function of that tank. It would not be used for drinking water. And I'm very certain that 1,000 gallons is not what the code recommends. I think it's more than that, but I would be remiss to say definitively a certain number because I'm more fluent with California code, but that's part of the review process that I spoke of earlier is if and when we're asked to formally review the plans that the county would develop, we would go through and crosswalk all of the plans and identify this item number two or whatever, this is not enough water. We're going to need X amount of water to extinguish a fire for either one of the vehicles or encampment sites. So the water is required to put out a fire in a tent or if there's eventually bungalows. I don't know what else the proposal even has in it to be cited out there.
One of the many moving parts of this proposal, you're both deep into this, I'm sure. And I'm pretty sure that we'll have more questions related to this. As I've said before, the questions ebb and flow of our city officials, depending on what's on the mind of the public. And it does appear to me, I think it's a safe bet, that there will be more questions coming. I have another question, but, you know, folks, I do have to tell you, they need to come a little earlier in the session. We are at the end.
So, am I muted? No,
you're live.
I just welcome Chief Black to the community and coming from public service for working for 25 years in public safety. I know, and same for John, it can be very thankless. And I'm just as guilty too to ask questions and not giving solutions. I appreciate that the commissioners and John, you guys are trying to doing something because that's more doing nothing is not the answer. So you're in a hard spot. I don't have solutions. I wish I did. I know it's just a difficult time, but I appreciate all that you do and Chief Black, you as well. Public safety is tough. I've done it. And, I'm glad it was a great career, but I'm glad where I'm at now. And I'm watching you guys go through it. And I want to be more supportive as opposed to just throwing out why this, why that. So that's all. Just thank you for all your work, both you guys.
Thanks, Sonny. Thanks for just paying attention. It's okay to be critical. I think I just appreciate your paying attention to this critical issue.
Well, thank you, everybody. We're at the end of Brewocracy now. This is KPTZ. We do this every week, and I can always take your questions at any time, dj@kptz.org. Thank you, Chief Black, and thank you, John Morrow, as usual.
Thanks, Sim. See you next week. Thank you, Chief.
All right.
You bet.
Well, yes, another Brewocracy now. In the books, a great way to find out what's going on Port Townsend. I want to thank everybody for being out there in that hot seat. And thank you, everybody that submits questions. It's just a great way to be involved in this community. Until next week, bye.